Catholic Radio Indy now presents Faith in Action, a program that looks at how everyday people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Our program is underwritten in part by Franciscan St. Francis Health, providing faith-based integrated health care, a recipient of HealthGrade's 2015 America's 100 Best Hospitals Award, and by Marian University, a great Catholic university dedicated to providing students with excellence in teaching and learning in the Franciscan and liberal arts tradition, preparing transformative leaders for service to the world. And now, here's today's edition of Faith in Action. This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley, and our co-host is MJ Crowder.
You know what we have coming up within just a couple weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks.
It is coming up again.
It is.
Our Share-a-thon.
It
here
is.
On Catholic Radio.
It is.
Still need some volunteers to answer the phone and help out in a couple of other little capacities as well. Not hard work. It's a lot of fun. You get to meet some other Catholic Radio listeners, and who knows, maybe your next best friend. You never know. But it's easy. We need people to answer the phones. If you can help us out, we're going to be here on November 1st and November 2nd. We have two short shifts each day. One is from 6:30 in the morning till 9. The other is from 3:30 in the afternoon until 6. Now, we're not asking people to work both of them, just one of them, just one day, one shift. If you can help us out answering the phones, give us a call at 317-870-8400. 317-870-8400. For all of our new listeners in Anderson, still 98.3 is our new station. We still call it new in Anderson, about 2 months old now. And so for our Anderson listeners, this will be a first for you, a share-a-thon. It's one of the few days a year that we take our regular programming off the air so that we can raise the funds to keep our regular programming on the air. And hopefully we'll get some good participation in that from Anderson as well. That's November 1st and November 2nd, our share-a-thon here on Catholic Radio. If you can help, give us a call.
317-870-8400. We're already practicing that number. Our guest today on Faith in Action is Sandra Measel, and she's kind of our recurring historian who comes every couple months, about every 7 weeks, and tells us more stories.
Yes, I have some good ones this time.
And we started this. If you have not been listening, you must go back to the podcast, to the first of the year, because we started with the Reformation, with the King Henry VIII, and then have kind of followed it all chronologically all the way through the Reformation and after. But some fascinating tidbits in there that you might not have known before, and I'm sure today will be no exception. I ran across the book the other day. I was cleaning out the bookcase, and I'm kind of at that age when you need to give some of the stuff to your kids and imagine that someday you'll be downsizing, right? And I ran across your book.
Oh.
And I thought, and I gave it to my son, who loved the Da Vinci I know, right?
That's the wrong Da Vinci book.
I know. Well, he liked the movie. I don't know whether he read the book, but he liked the movie. And so I gave that to, I told him I had it. And I said, just promise me that with an open mind, you will read the Da Vinci hoax. So he's a smart man. And I'm really kind of interested to have a discussion with him, an intellectual discussion with him after he's read it. So because I certainly found out a lot I didn't know reading your book.
Oh. Well, so did we.
Yeah. I mean, well, and I think that we were kind of fed hook, line, and sinker. A lot of us who read books nowadays or go to the movies take kind of things at face value. Mm-hmm. And Sandra, the reason you are such a valuable asset to us here at Catholic Radio is I was just telling someone, Cardinal Burke is going to visit us next week, and Raymond Burke. And he certainly is a defender of the faith. And we were chatting about how a generation or two of us are really not very well formed. And some of us think we know our faith, and he said the dangerous word there is think. We think We know our faith. So that's why we have you, Sandra, listeners. She has been a wonderful resource for us here at Catholic Radio to kind of go back in time a little bit and really sometimes set to truth some understandings that we might have had or misunderstandings about the history of our church. This week, the topic is the Desert Fathers.
Yes, and thank you for inviting me back. The Desert Fathers are the wise old monks, first in Egypt, then in Palestine, then in Syria, who exerted enormous positive influence on the church in patristic times. In fact, they start out going to the desert before the freedom of the church. People start going out to the desert, fleeing persecution, or they just want to get away from it all. They're tired of this corrupt society. About the middle of the 3rd century. Now, legend says that the first man to go out was St. Paul, the first hermit, and he lives by himself way out in the desert for almost 100 years. And St. Anthony, who is the first historical founder of monasticism, is moved to visit him and is there when the old fellow dies, and buries him with the help of two lions. But
with the help of two lions.
Yes. The Desert Fathers have a happy relationship with animals, even unlikely animals like hyenas and crocodiles.
And they wrote about this.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, they did. But when Anthony visits Paul, who hasn't seen a human being for yay many years, oh, tell me, are there still men living in cities? Is the world still there? And Anthony says, well, yes, it is, but we're not being persecuted anymore, and we're free to be Christians. And then they dine on loaves of bread brought by a friendly raven, too, because he has a guest. And then the old fellow dies, and as I said, Anthony buries him. Then Anthony goes back to his own monastery. Anthony, who was born in the middle of the 3rd century, was a small landowner in Egypt. And one day in church, when he's about 20 years old, he hears the reading on go sell what thou hast and give to the poor and come follow me.
Sure.
And right. He takes it dead literally, and he goes home and sells everything, including his sister's dowry. He puts her in a convent, and then he goes to live in a little shed on his former home property. And after a while, he goes to live in a tomb, and he stays there for 20 years. And when he comes out, he is purged of all the possibilities of sin, and he becomes a light to other people. He's kind of embarrassed about that, and people come to him for advice, and he has a monastery on the east bank of the Nile, and then he goes farther away into a mountain on the west bank of the Red Sea to get away from people, and people still coming because he is so wise. The whole point of being a desert monk was that you have renounced the world, you have died to the world so that you may live to God, you practice renunciation of your property, you are purified, you do penance for your sins, and when you are finally detached sufficiently, you achieve a state of peace and profound sanctity that overflows to other people, and you approximate the life of Adam before the fall. And that's why I mentioned they have happy relationships with animals. Not always happy from the animal's point of view, but one of the Desert Fathers actually cured a hyena's blind cubs, and nobody who's ever been around hyenas would do a favor for a hyena. Another one, needing to cross the Nile very quickly to help someone on the other side, commandeered a crocodile and rode him across like a jet ski, did his business, came back, and then also on the back of the crocodile, and realized, not nice to have a crocodile around human habitation, so he
Uh-oh.
He dropped dead.
Oh.
The crocodile, not the monk. Yeah.
If you're just now tuning in, listeners, our guest today is Sandra Measel, and we are talking about the Desert Fathers. You know, I wondered, as I was preparing for the show today, you kind of touched on it, but the reason, why did they go to the desert? I mean, why did they isolate themselves? And you were just kind of saying that, but to what good purpose? To what, I guess I'm coming from, you know, whatever we do should serve the greater good of the church on earth, you know, yes, in order to help us to get to heaven. But to go away in isolation, what good did that serve?
By renouncing, doing penance, and achieving this inner peace, their emptiness allows God to fill them, and then they become spiritual guides to other people. They do a certain amount of healing. They are sources of inspiration to all around them. As the monks multiply and begin to live in clusters around villages, the villagers felt that the prayers of the monks were protecting the village. And the monks were important for evangelizing the average Egyptian who lives in a village and not one of the big cities, because they stayed pagan much longer than the people in, say, Alexandria did. And the example of the monks was very important. And their sayings have come down to us, and they're really delightful. There are several published collections of them. The one that I happen to have was done by Sister Benedicta Ward, and the Sayings of the Desert Fathers, the Lives of the Desert Fathers, Harlots of the Desert. Harlots of the Desert.
Are we talking about Harlots of the Desert?
Harlots of the Desert. That's the title of her book.
Oh, my goodness.
And you have, of course, famous Mary of Egypt, who was a prostitute who went on a pilgrimage thinking to pick up some customers and found that she could not go into the church and repented and went out to the desert with 3 loaves of bread and stayed for 50 years clad in naught but her own long hair, getting very thin.
Listeners, if you're just now tuning in, Sandra Measel is chatting with us about the Desert Fathers, and we have much more to come, but we need to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Catholic Radio Indy. There's lives being touched every single day by it.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. Our guest today, Sandra Measel. We're chatting with Sandra about the Desert Fathers, and you touched on it a little bit in the first half, but, you know, I wonder if we didn't have Desert Mothers. Were there women also in this?
They're certainly not as numerous, but there were women who repeated this pattern. In Egypt, the most famous one is Syncletica. And, of course, I just mentioned Mary of Egypt. In Palestine, there are a number of wealthy Roman widows who sell all their property and support St. Jerome, because without the ladies, he might not have fared so well as a monk in Palestine. They underwrote the cost of the monasteries. They did everything for him.
Oh, my.
And you also have individual women who live essentially as nuns within the family home. So, yet the pattern of life, which starts as hermits, it then becomes groups of hermits in their little huts clustered loosely together, and they meet on Saturday and Sunday for common prayer and the Mass. And then you have monks who live all together in one building, tilling a farm. They grow their own food. The individual hermits would maybe have a little garden, but they also would live by making baskets and mats, which they could trade to the village people for food. Or in the case of the large monasteries, they'd have enough surplus food to give to the poor or send out in times of famine. And the Syrian, they're the same pattern of monasticism spreads throughout the eastern half of the Roman world. And the monks in Syria are probably the most exotic of the lot. Some of them live in hollow trees. They didn't even want a hut. A hollow tree was good enough. And the most curious one, I just love this guy. You can get an entire biography of him. Theodore of Sicon.
Yes, yes, I wrote him down. Tell us about that critter, because he sounded interesting.
Oh, he was interesting. He had the most unlikely background for a saint. His mother, his aunt, and his grandmother were prostitutes at the family inn. His father was a camel trainer who had a one-night stand with his mother. And, however, Theodore was very pious from childhood. In fact, at one point, he's living in a cage hung over the side of a cliff with only animals for company. And inspired by his example, his female relatives leave the trade and become known for their good cooking, and that is sufficient to keep the inn going. Well, Theodore eventually becomes bishop of the town of Sicon in Syria and is a very famous expeller of demons. And when he comes to the town, the demons quiver. They called him Iron Eater.
Iron Eater.
Iron Eater, because he was so tough and uncompromising, and he would tell off the emperor if that was necessary. He goes back and gives up the bishop's post and retires as a monk. Oh, another Syriac desert saint is Pelagia, also known as Thais, and that's what the opera is based on, about the famous harlot who renounces everything because the bishop spoke kindly to her and lives as an anchoress in the desert for the rest of her life.
You know, it's interesting. You hear so many great people who talk about reading Lives of the Saints for their inspiration, for their daily mm-hmm. lives, for how to conduct themselves mm-hmm. on a daily basis. And I'm listening to you talk about these saints. And if you just choose little bits and pieces here and there, I mean, what great examples of not only sacrifice, but self-denial.
Yes.
They had the discipline that they had.
Yes.
It's phenomenal, Sandra.
And I must emphasize that they didn't indulge in weird penances, at least the Egyptian monks. We pass over Theodore and his cage. They depended on abstinence from food, from wine, and they slept very little because they would spend the night in prayer. They were not beating themselves with whips. They weren't wearing
sackcloth or whatever.
They were wearing very simple, raggedy linen garments.
Right.
But they aren't doing the weird things that sometimes people associate with sanctity. But they became experts in recognizing how our thoughts shape our actions, and recurring thoughts, and how to purify your mind and pacify your soul until you were a crystal vessel waiting to be filled with grace. And the sayings of the Desert Fathers, this is actually a particular book that was compiled back in ancient times, and this happens to be Benedict Award's translation of it. They are full of homely wisdom.
Like anecdotal wisdom.
Yes. A monk asked the old man, "Oh, Father, give me a word." And he said, "Well, I would not presume to give you a word, but I will tell you a piece of wisdom that was spoken to me by my father abbot." And they're very basic. They are always puncturing pretensions. And
here's one right here. So I'm just leafing mm-hmm. through this book. And the interesting thing about this book, and as Sandra said, it's called The Sayings of the Desert Fathers, mm-hmm. An alphabetical collection translated by Benedict Award. But so I just flipped it open. And I don't know how you pronounce that.
Mateos, I suppose.
But the very first one, it says, and these are quotations, of course, it says the saying of the Desert Fathers, but this is kind of a little nugget of wisdom right here. It says, I prefer a light and steady activity to one that is painful at the beginning but is soon broken off. Mm-hmm. So think about that. So steady as she goes. So just something that is consistent. But as you said earlier, you know, the great mortifications that you read about, self-mortifications that you read about, seem so incredible and audacious and, oh my goodness.
Yes.
But how sustaining is that? This is interesting, that a light and steady activity to one that is painful, because it's sustainable.
You live on your handful of millet and chickpeas and a little greens, maybe, if you're lucky, but you don't fast yourself to death. You work hard because you have to grow food or help people or weave your mats, but you don't have to torment yourself. Life is enough of a torment, they felt. What they really want to see is detachment and obedience. For instance, St. John the Dwarf, who was one of the Egyptian fathers, was told by his abbot, the abbot sticks his staff into the ground. He says, okay, John, water that staff until it blooms. Yes, Father Abbot. And he does, and it blooms.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, listeners, if you're just now tuning in, Sandra Measle is our guest today. She's a recurring guest. Very abundantly blessed to have on a regular basis. Every few weeks, she comes and tells us more stories about basically the history of the Catholic Church. We're chatting today about the Desert Fathers.
Now, Sandra, did some of these Desert Fathers have large followings?
I mean, yes. By Anthony is, first it's a handful, and then it gets to be more, and he has to have a monastery, and then he goes off to another place, and more of them come. Pachomius, who devised the common life where they all live in the same building, supposedly had hundreds, even thousands of followers, and they became, thanks to the generosity of wealthy, pious people, landowners, and all these hundreds and thousands of monks are cultivating the rich land along the Nile. And some of those monasteries still exist. Some of them are ruins, but a few of them do have actual live Coptic monks living in them. And you always hear about the temptations of St. Anthony, often represented in art, how demons would try to terrify him and fling him around until he was injured and show him horrible sights and scream. And he took it very calmly. Oh, what are you going to do today? But the other hazard to living as a devoted, steady desert father, tourists, wealthy, pious people wanted to see the holy men, particularly rich, pious women. And the holy men didn't like to be seen. And in fact, one Roman official's wife was very intent, I must see him, I must see him, and she made a real pest of herself. And finally, the holy man passed a message to her husband, I will visit her in a dream. I haven't set eyes on a woman in 50 years, and I'm not going to start now.
Oh my goodness, how wild is that? Sandra Measle, our guest today on Faith in Action. We're talking about the Desert Fathers. You know, I wondered how they were regarded in their day, during their lifetimes, And by and large, would you say most of them were well-regarded in their
day? Oh, yes. People looked up to them, and they would occasionally descend upon Alexandria and take part in some religious dispute or other. People, as I said, the villagers felt that having monks in your area was a protection for the village.
Sure. You know, I wonder how much of their writings do we have?
Well, there were collections of their sayings. There are a number of lives that have been collected, either short ones or like a small book. Three Byzantine saints is one of the ones. That's where the Theodore of Sicon stuff comes from. And they were not trying to write. They were trying to live it and pass on their teachings orally. But some people took them down. And you also have accounts of people who went on these holy tours and went all the way up the Nile to the farthest reaches of Egypt and visited and set down what they saw.
Okay, so if you in your reading about the Desert Fathers, and you know, I'd love to see. I can't imagine in my wildest dreams what your library looks like. I mean, I just imagine it a room or two or three lined with books, books and books and books and books.
Yes.
My mother was a great reader, and she, oftentimes when I would ask her a question, she knew the answer off the top of her head, 99.9% of the time. And she would often answer it, and then a few days later, I would get a book or two in the mail. And I loved it because it was something, it's like a little tidbit to hold you over, but here's the rest of the story.
Yes.
And you kind of remind me, you're kind of like that because you have such recall, such, Jim and I have spoken about this several times, we ask you something, and then off the top of your head, you just can go dates and recall incidences about people that are just, to me, pretty incredible.
Please understand that I did prep for this. I got off my books, and I would also like to mention, if people want to read more about them, The Word in the Desert by Douglas Burton Christie is a lovely academic overview, Scripture and the Quest for Holiness in Early Christian Monasticism, because after all, what they were trying to do was be holy, not be weird. Mm-hmm. The weirdness just was a side effect.
Sometimes happens, right? And then you've got another one here.
The Lives of the Desert Fathers, again, by Benedicta Ward, who was an Anglican nun, but she's a very fine authority on this period. And I also have The Harlots of the Desert at home. I didn't bring that.
That's another intrigue. Okay, so we're heading towards Christmas. Advent's coming up, November and December. What do you think we ought to finish out the year talking about?
Well, I was going to offer you The Conversion of the Barbarians, but if you want anything on specifically related to Christmas, like the real Saint Nicholas or the real wise men.
Ooh. Mm. Okay, I like that, the real wise men, because there's so much lore.
Yes, it's connected. All lore.
Yeah.
Because the only thing we know about the wise men is what is in Saint Matthew. That is it.
Right.
But there are all sorts of fantastic legends, and the Cathedral of Cologne in Germany claims to have their relics in this gorgeous shrine.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, let's save that for around Christmas time, the real wise men. Our guest today on Faith in Action, Sandra Measle. God bless you for being our guest today.
You've been listening to Faith in Action, underwritten in part by Marian University and by Franciscan St. Francis Health. If you'd like to suggest a guest or a topic for a future program, call us at 317-870-8400 or email mj@catholicradioindy.org. And remember, you can hear or download this program or any Faith in Action program 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org. Just click on the Programming tab and select Podcasts.